live. Okay.
Greetings out there in the world of webcomics. Son of a bitch.
Hey. We're going to get that all day. There's no way to turn off your ringer. You can't turn off that ringer. It's ringing from the base.
Wow.
Just
better now than half an hour from now.
Yeah.
Did you unplug it?
I unplugged it.
Good. Good man.
Danielle, have you been working on a tagline? We've been all going with taglines.
Taglines.
Yeah, you need, when you get introduced, you need a tagline.
Like, what kind of tagline? What's yours?
You'll get the gist.
We'll introduce you last.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right, ready?
All right. Good evening. Good morning, all of you out there in a webcomics land. It's time for another episode of the increasingly popular podcast, Webcomics Weekly.
When the podcast starts to toot its own horn, then that's the downfall. You don't want to do that.
With us today, as always, are some of our regular panelists. Directly across the desk from me is Crazy Christopher Straub of StarslipCrisis.com.
Could be.
Hailing from the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, it's Brad Geiger.
I don't think there's a man, a woman, or a child alive in America today who doesn't enjoy and crave a tasty, buttery snack. I've been working on that all week.
Evil-comic.com.
Calling from or talking to us from sunny California, it's Dave Kellett.
Crickets.
Oh, wait a minute. Dave's not here today. Dave is unavailable. So in his place, in his stead, we have recruited the lovely and talented. Where are you from? Virginia now, I guess?
West Virginia. Very different.
Yes. Danielle Corsetto of girlswithslingshots.com.
And I'm not nearly as clever as the rest of you, so I got nothing. It's just me.
And then if you introduce me now, Chris.
And of course, across the desk from me, across the pond, Scott Kurtz, pvponline.com.
Poopy diapers. That's going to be sweep of the nation soon.
Poopy diapers. Could be. All right. So we wanted to talk about conventions.
Well, since Dave isn't available today, and since the four of us were recently gallivanting around the Baltimore Comic Con.
Oh, yeah.
And we learned a lot from each other, I think, in that weekend, that steamy weekend. I think we could do a Webcomics Weekly on conventions, because conventions are a big part of working in comics, promoting your work, getting it out there, fan service. Hopefully they could become a good source of income and networking, and so we're going to talk all about conventions.
I want to read a letter, not right now, let's just start talking about conventions, but I have a letter from somebody who's asking advice about setting up at San Diego Comic-Con.
And we
can bat that one around.
That is a big one.
I know.
That is a big one.
But let's just start with Baltimore.
Yeah, let's start with Baltimore.
Good con. Great con.
Great convention. It's a regular stop for me every year.
You called it one of the, like, in the three.
I call it one of the triumvirate. There are three conventions that are being run. They're smaller run conventions They're what I call creator-owned, you know. They're run by people that love comics and own comic book shops. Emerald City is run by Jim DeMonakis in Seattle. He owns his own comic book shop in Seattle. Then you have the Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina, that's run by Shelton, and he owns his own comic book shop. And then Baltimore, run by Mark Nathan, and he owns his own comic book shop. And they're smaller shows with great turnout, great guests every year, and the fans are there for comics, not media, not to get Lou Ferrigno's signatures. They're there for comics.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever done the Pittsburgh convention?
No.
That was my first convention.
Real mine too. That's actually my favorite. It's kind of the same thing. I'm pretty sure that Mike, the guy who runs it, Mike and Renee own a comic book shop as well. And that's a great. It's a huge show.
What's the name of it?
I think it's just Pittsburgh Comic Con.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I did that show back in 2001, and it was a great geek moment for me because I got to go up and meet Martin O'Dell. And I'm sitting there, and I get a Green Lantern T-shirt, and I'm deciding whether I want to get it autographed or not. And his wife says, "You better do it now, because he doesn't show up to just every comic convention." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I better do that. So I get it. I come home, and I'm great. And I go to my next comic convention, and I forget what that was. It might have been Baltimore. It might have been San Diego. But there's Martin O'Dell. And I literally saw him at every convention I went to for the next, like, 4 years until I think he passed away last year. But I say it became a running gag. It's like he's just like a staple. And she was sitting there telling me, "Now you better do it now because he didn't show up to every convention."
Yeah. So what's your favorite one, Scott?
It's a tough call. I mean, really, I guess I'd say my favorite, there's going to be a tipping point, is Seattle, because I love the area so much. And the Penny Arcade guys are there, and it's a I'm wistful and tearful every time I have to leave that state, you know. So I really love the Emerald show. But that's not to diss Heroes or Baltimore. I hate the climate in Baltimore. It's a swamp.
We didn't get to look at Baltimore a whole
lot. I'm going to strangle Mark Nathan if he schedules another show directly against a Major League Baseball game that's at Camden Yards. And Baltimore, I always end up flying out on September 11th for some reason. The fate has conspired.
We couldn't avoid it.
We could not avoid it this year. But
so weird.
But no, they're all really good shows. They're the shows that for me have become the shows I really want to attend, because there's a fine mix of more than easily breaking even on my costs. Usually I'm flown out by these people as guests. There's a number of professionals there that have become over time my friends, that originally were networking opportunities and are now my friends. And so it's a time to meet the fans, a time to catch up with friends.
Let's talk about
that. Talk business and make money.
What are everybody's goals at cons? Are they to cash in, or is it to do fan service, or network? What are the two most important ones?
Ooh, I couldn't pick two. They're all of the above for me. All of the above.
I think it depends on where you are in the progression of your strip. I think if you're just starting out, you're doing it for networking and to hopefully gain a few new readers and stuff like that. And as you go down the line and you progress and grow, monetizing your comic becomes more and more important. Solidifying your relationship with current readers and then making new relationships with new readers becomes important. And then networking with other people who are publishing and creating comics is thrown in there and becomes more and more important as well.
Yeah. I think for me it's more about meeting people and meeting readers and connecting with them, because the way I look at it, and maybe I'm wrong, somebody correct me, but I think about how many people I may meet in the span of a two-day con. And let's say that I hand a flyer to 200, 300 people, which is a large number of people. For my traffic-wise, that is not a big deal. If I was to gain 200 people, I don't know that I would really notice it, because I fluctuate. You know what I mean? But if I was to sell to 200 people, that is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. But I think when you're at a comic convention, you've got a special group of people there that are predisposed to become strong webcomics readers, and many of whom already are. So it's a lot more important to grab those readers, because by next year, you've got a much better chance of turning those into readers of your strip specifically. And by next year, you've got a good chance of turning them into buyers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're a real jerk, introducing yourself to people who would be interested in reading more webcomics and possibly yours, just knowing that you're a nice person, they're going to love, like, you know, catching up on you and, like, reading the blog and reading your strip and everything. Just knowing that somebody's a nice person sometimes will do it for you. I mean, unless somebody's actually told you you're just a total jerk, go ahead and go to conventions and, you know, meet new people and try to get more. That's where the networking comes in. It's so important, meeting people one-on-one.
That's going to be my tip.
I can speak to where that's effective, because for the longest time, I was having really bad anxiety problems at conventions. I would make it through the Friday of the show before that would start to kick in, and now I'd be pretty useless on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And that was coming across to the fans that came up to me as, Scott doesn't want to be there. He was angry to see me. He wasn't friendly. He didn't say hello. He didn't say goodbye, you know. Mm-hmm. And that went a real long way. I mean, it was starting to get go around that I was getting a really bad reputation at conventions, I think. So when all that turned around, it immediately reversed itself, you know. But you'll see it. You can technorata your name after a show, and that's what people are posting about, is how friendly you were.
Yeah, true.
You know, and how accessible you were.
That's important.
It is. It's very important. And it's as simple as just being excited to see him. I had one guy that was really I had this weird thing where I get kind of what I call connier. By Saturday or Sunday, the constant din of people talking deafens me.
Yeah.
And people will walk up and say, it's nice to meet you. My name's blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I did not catch your name. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And you find yourself conspicuously looking at their badge, and then they catch you looking at their badge.
Yeah,
you've got that uncomfortable moment.
I don't get upset. I'm not going to be upset doing that because I just met them. I don't necessarily know their name.
But I had some guy,
especially
post,
if I'm signing the book.
I don't know if I can find it, but I had some guy post about the Baltimore Con that he was really surprised how adamant I was to learn his name. Because I think at one point I stood up and leaned in. Because I just could not hear it. But that made a lasting impression on him that I gave a shit to learn his... Oh, I cursed. I'll fix that in post. That I made the point to learn his name.
Yeah.
And remember that joke I did about the not wanting to shake hands?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Everybody thought that was real. And it really backfired on me. No, seriously. that stuff is very real.
Yeah.
You have to balance that, because on your blog you have a tendency to be like, this is from the heart, this is the truth. And so when you come out with, this is from the heart, this is the truth, wink, and it's I don't want to shake your hand, then people, they believe it.
Yeah.
Whereas my problem is everything I post is, this is the truth, ha ha, funny. And then when I actually write something serious, they're like, I don't know how to take that. I don't know if you're being real. So that's rough.
I thought it was real.
You know, some magazine to the top, it says special advertising supplement, so you know it's an ad. I need to have
special
humor supplement.
I'm just playing. Go.
I want to talk about sketches a bit, because I'm finding an interesting tipping point at my table when it comes to sketches. For the longest time, I wouldn't charge because I was a little insecure about my art. I didn't feel it was right to charge for sketches.
Yeah.
And most of my pro friends... And the biggest advocates of that were Mike Ringo and Frank Cho, were just yelling at me to charge for sketches. Peterson, too. And so I started charging. I think it was like $5, $10. And it's not enough, because what happens is I'll be selling what briskly, making good sales, getting the book out there, and then one person asks for a commission-like sketch, not just a quick head sketch of the book. And then a line forms. And sure, I'm getting $5 or $10 for each one, but that's it. The purchasing stops. I mean, as soon as
people know they can get a sketch out of you and walk away cheap.
Yeah, they're like, I could spend $20 on or $10 on a book, you know, and walk away, or I could spend $10 on a sketch and walk away, and I can get the book at the comic book store, which is, I mean, $10 in my pocket either way. But I don't have to ship my sketches back to the house, you know.
Point.
So,
right.
What I'd like to do is get them to buy both.
Yeah.
Danielle, you've got a really good system for this. I'd like to hear you talk about it for a little bit.
Thanks. I actually used to do the same thing when I started out. My first convention actually was Pittsburgh, the one I was talking about. And I think I was charging, like, seriously $3. I don't know where I came up with that number, but I was charging, like, $3 for full, convention sketches that were on 9x12 Bristol. And same thing, people were yelling at me, mostly because I had such low prices, and everybody's like, man, we can't sell anything with you selling sketches for $3. So I just kind of eventually would increase the number every year. And I started doing conventions with Michael Lark, just the ones up in the Big Apple conventions up in New York. And watching him, I mean, he's been doing this for a long time. He has like a pre-printed out list. He's more organized than I am. Pre-printed out list for people to sign up for sketches. And man, people see that and have a pen available, as long as you put a pen out there, they will just start signing up immediately. The biggest help has been the networking of collectors. There are people out there who will just, they'll bring hundreds of dollars just to get original artwork. And if you do really good sketches, they'll come right up to you. They know you already. They've seen your work online. They've talked to other people. And they're going to come right up and start signing up for your sketches. I'll usually have, actually, Baltimore, I had 13 people sign up by mid-afternoon on Saturday, and I just had to close the list. It's too much for me.
Well, you really impressed the hell out of me with your sketch setup at the show, and I really think I'm going to start doing that at my next show.
Absolutely.
Because then what you do is, you know, if someone comes up and says, can you do a sketch, and I'm sketched out, and I say, no, I'm not, they're disappointed. But if you can show them the list and say, look, I'm sorry, I need to get here earlier.
Yeah.
And I think it also helps, a big, big help is that you have a little portfolio also on your table, displaying the goods. You know?
You got it.
I think that's super important.
Yeah.
That really helps out. Anybody who hasn't seen my work yet, I've had several people come up and go, oh, what is this? Are these for sale? And I'd be like, no, they're examples of what I do, and here's the sign-up list. And they just immediately sign up. I'm always thinking they're going to be like, oh, $40. That's a lot. I'm leaving. But they sign up.
And you've got to be prepared when you're selling your sketches that there are going to be some people that come up and expect you to do a sketch for free or maybe think that you're pricing them too high, and they're gonna walk away with nothing in their hands, and you're gonna feel like you disappointed them. But the bottom line is that's what this convention is all about. Everybody who's there set up is there in one way or another to try to help further their professional cause, and that means making money, you know. And I usually what I do is, you know, if someone is nice and they come up and they ask for a sketch, I'll do them a quick, you know, 20-30 second sketch for free. But you got to realize that these sketches take time, and if you start putting in a whole lot of time into something on a free sketch, you're also kind of cheating that next guy who comes down the line who does bite for $20 or $40 or $80, and if you're not putting a significant amount more time into that paid commission, you're kind of cheating the guys that are paying.
Yeah, you got it. I do the exact same thing. And actually, for me, if somebody wants a free sketch, unless it's a kid, in which case, of course, they're getting whatever the heck they want.
Yeah.
And it's usually their favorite animal or something. I'll come up with something for them. Anybody else who comes up, you know, can I get a sketch, and holds up their sketchbook, I just ask them, you know, I point to the list and say, do you want a nice paid one or a really quick free one?
Right.
And they'll say a really quick free one. They understand the difference. And I'll just draw whatever I want to without asking them, usually.
Yeah,
I do. I do give kids. I give little kids free plushes. I give them free sketches.
Aww.
It's hard. It's hard to not. Well, the little kids see the plush. They don't know PvP.
They just
see the plush and like it.
That's a great piece of merchandise.
I know.
yeah, it is.
But anyway, so
how do you guys feel about putting sketches in books, in general? I mean, somebody's going to buy a book. You've done all the illustrations that go into that book already. You've put a ton of work into this book. How do you feel about putting the sketches inside the book?
I think it's a great value add.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very personal touch.
I'm having a hard time rectifying that, unless we're talking about a really, really, you know, again, the down and dirty quick sketch, because the tendency is there to put all kinds of time into these sketches that go inside of a book. And if you're doing that at the expense of the commission sketches, you're hurting yourself.
Yeah, make it small. But it's such a nice personal touch that I think it's really important to do that.
The sketches I do in the book are so rough. It's just that I've drawn Skull so many times. It's practically a second signature for me.
That's what I'm saying, is that you write your name sloppy. You're not going to take your time printing it. That's your signature. This sketch is an extension of your signature.
It really is, but I have people use that as a way to get around paying for a sketch. They'll be like, "Can you do a real quick thing in the book for me?" You know.
Yeah, but I think it's great. I followed Dave Kellett's lead on doing the artist edition of my book, and I can charge an additional $10 at the table if they want a decent sketch in there. And that's worked out pretty well. Even at cons, they're like, "I noticed you're doing the artist edition online." I'm like, "Yeah." And they ask, "Can I get that now? Can I do that here?" And I do.
Yeah.
I oblige them.
No, absolutely. But listen, there's guys there charging a lot more for sketches than we're charging. Every time someone convinces me to charge more, when I at San Diego, I was charging 10, nobody balked. And then I was charging 20 at Baltimore at some points because I was giving some of the money to the Humane Society for that tribute to Mike thing. And nobody balked. Nobody balked at whatever price I threw them. You know? Everyone's like, "You're doing sketches?" And I'm like, "I'm charging." And they're like, "Well, how much?" I go 20, and they go, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
And the reason why is because if they go to Walt Simonson or David Finch, those guys are charging $50, $75.
Right.
And as hard as it might be for us to believe, they look at us the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, they love our art. They're not coming to us for a sketch because they hate our art. They want it.
Good point.
So here's a question for everybody. What is the, on a reasonably good character sketch, just a single character, what is the highest price you feel comfortable charging?
$50 for black and white, $100 for color is what I'm going to be doing soon.
Wow.
I know.
After meeting Danielle, my prices just went up.
Everybody who wanted to buy art cheap from these guys. It's all my fault.
I've been charging $10 for foreground. I broke it down between foreground and complete foreground plus background. And it was $10 for foreground and $20 for a foreground plus a background.
Well, what is a foreground, Brad? If someone comes up and goes, "Could you draw Lightning Lass and the dog with the brain on his head and the bug guy, but all in the foreground?"
if they started asking for multiple people, I would kind of negotiate it at, you know, on site. You know, if it was something that I knew I could do relatively easy, I'd give them a slide. And if I said, "That sounds like it's going to be a little bit more complex," then I'd you know, start going towards the $20 figure.
And also,
but Danielle's over there kicking all of our butts, and she's charging 40. What is it, Danielle? 40 and 80.
It was 40 and 80. Yeah, and actually,
it's per
character.
It was at the last convention. You said your prices are going up.
Per character.
Yeah.
If you ask for two characters,
the bottom line is that if you find out that all of a sudden you're turning people off with your prices, you can always come down.
Exactly, and I never have. Like Scott was saying, the exact same thing has happened to me. I'm thinking nobody's going to pay this, and they just okay, sure. Here's $100 or whatever. All right.
I'm telling you, though, there's two things on Danielle's table that make people, their brains click over and say, okay. And it's because she's got the portfolio full of sketches to look at, and she's got an official clipboard with a printed list on it and their names on the list. I might show up at cons with a list, and I might fake some names to write on it, because I really do think people see that list and go, "Oh, people are paying for this. I better get in on it fast."
Exactly. Well,
I do the same thing. I do an email. I send my comic out through email, and I send out a newsletter. And I do the same thing with that sign-up list. I always put two or three fake names on there, because it's priming the pump. People aren't gonna sign up until they see, "Oh, there's a few other people taking the dive on this. It's safe for me." You know, there's a little bit of that a herd mentality that comes into this.
If people come up and it's like sketch one, Brent and Jade, $75, rustle up some grub. And then, you know, Brent and Skull playing video games, $100, Kent Budge, you know, it's like, I can't even make up good names. But how do you guys feel about I've had someone suggest, and I have a friend here locally named Cal Slayton who does the pre-made sketch. He will bring, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 pre-done sketches of different superheroes, and he has them on sale.
I've done that at conventions. It works really well.
Does it work well?
Yes, because it works in two ways. Number one, it's a little bit of an advertisement, because people come up, you've got it sitting out, and they say, oh, you're doing sketches. Well, bingo. You know, now you know somebody's interested. And number two, sometimes people are, you know, they might be in a hurry. They might, you know, Baltimore, there was a couple guys out that had like five or six sketchbooks that were, they were continually circulating throughout the convention floor the entire weekend. And every now and again, they'd stop by and they'd see something they like. Well, they don't have their sketchbook available. It's going to be over here. It's going to be over there. But they might be willing to buy something that they can just hand over the money. It can be an instant transaction, and they've got it. They know what they're going to get, and they walk away with it.
I do mine a little bit differently. I actually have on the sketch list, I've never seen anybody else do this. I'm sure I'm the only one. You can circle humor or no humor. Some people want the very, like, you know, the stoic Wonder Woman sketch or whatever. Most people are coming to get the humorous sketches. It's what I kind of specialize in. Huh. So it wouldn't work for me, but I'm actually going to be doing something kind of similar to that. It's still going to be by request. I'm going to stop doing major sketches at conventions because I just don't get a chance to talk to anybody during the convention. I'm usually sketching the entire time. So I'm going to start actually having pre-orders before I go to conventions and just bring the sketch finished and, you know, not have to worry about sitting there and talking the entire time. Or,
that's a good
not
idea.
Talking. Yeah.
That brings up the humor serious thing. That brings up something very funny. There was a guy at the Baltimore Con, and he was, I don't know what nationality he was, but he had a very lyrical accent. But the guy in front of me got a sketch, and I drew Skull burping. And he walked up to me, and he goes, "I would also like Skull, but please do not have him burping. I don't want him burping." And I said, "All right, I'll give you a very serious Skull." So I drew him, you won't be able to see this, but Chris, I drew him like this.
You drew him like Washington crossing the
plane. Yes.
Yeah, there's another tip that I kind of stumbled on when you're doing sketches, and that is I always buy some comic book backing boards and some of those poly bags that they slide comics into. And if you got to kind of shop around because some of them are glossy on both sides, but you want to get the kind that have a little bit of a matte finish on the boards on one side. You can do your illustration on that, slide it into the poly bag, and you've got a really nice presentation for people. It's all sealed up in plastic. It's something that most of the people that are on the floor are familiar with, the comic book backing boards. It's got a nice thematic feel to it, and they do really well.
Huh, I never thought of doing that. That's cool.
I really hate those. I personally hate those backboards because depending on which ones you get, they don't take ink very well.
I can't draw on these on the shiny side.
Well, yeah, but I even have trouble on the coarse side too.
Oh, do you?
Let me tell you what I do. Let me tell you what I've been doing, Brad. I have gone down to the local art store, and I've bought it's essentially the adult version of colored paper, construction paper, but it's kind of a textured. I think they call it tea paper or craft paper. You can get it in different colors. I like getting some of the earth tones, but you can get them in blues and greens and stuff. And I take those and I cut them into fours. And then I buy two of these. What are they? What are those? Those pencils. They're.
It's not like a grease pencil, but it's
almost
like
a grease pencil.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
China markers.
China markers. Called? Thank you. They're called China markers. They're kind of. You pull the string down and then you unloop them. And and what I do is I'll do sketches on that. So the paper is toned, it's colored, and then you use a Sharpie for the black line. But then you use the white the China pencil to bring out highlights, and it makes a sketch that really I think pops out. You don't want paper that's too dark, I don't think, because your black lines get lost in it. But I think it really stands out among other sketches, and I think it really helps the sketch.
I'm going to do my sketches that way from now on because I think
I think it
really shores up my mediocre artistry.
That was actually my tip. I think was that colored paper.
It's a good tip.
There's a whole book Image put out that Dave Johnson and all these guys did called the Drink and Draw book.
Oh yeah.
And it's a collection of their sketches that they did at different bars when they get together. And what they do is they use that tea paper and markers, but what they color with are those whiteout pens. That's how they do their white, because it gives it a really
a bold white.
Bold white.
Oh, yeah. I think about that one.
Yeah.
I think it's actually pretty cool if we insert our tips in the middle of the show so that there's no stall at the end. Oh, God. All right. Okay. Don't bring. No, that's stupid. Okay.
Well, here's another subject. If we could veer off for a moment, setting up at a table. What are like the top two or three things that you guys like to keep in mind when you're setting up at a table? And I'm gonna throw this out there too. Also, etiquette when you're talking about this. What's etiquette with your neighbors? There's a certain amount of comic convention etiquette that is developed that newer people might be interested in.
Huh.
And so I'm gonna throw that out to you guys.
Good idea.
How about don't have a looping soundtrack of something?
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think we've all been there.
Don't steal your neighbor's. You know, if somebody is standing right in front of the person's table, until they get over the crease between your table and your neighbor's table, do not steal their customers.
Yeah. God, oh, wow. Damn. I never even thought about that.
That happens.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen? Speaking from experience.
Here's a little pro tip for you, and this works wonders. When you're coming in on that first day to set up, Friday morning and Thursday morning, whatever it is, bring in a box of donuts, all right?
That's a good idea.
And you offer to the people on either side of you a little donut, a little refreshment, napkin, all that kind of stuff. You can get away with murder after that.
You're like the nicest person ever, Brad. It's just so sweet. No, I'm sitting next to you next time.
There's a self-serving purpose to that, because then every time you need to go make a bathroom run or whatever, you can leave all your stuff out on the table and look at your neighbor and say, "Hey, pal, would you mind watching my stuff while I just take a quick walk?"
Oh, yeah.
You're the donut guy. Nobody says no to the donut guy.
And you know why that
situations where I've set up next to a guy that I got a lot of hostility from, you know, because when you're sitting up at a lot of these Artist Alley tables, it's all about, you know, sometimes people kind of encroach on your space a little bit. You're tempted to get the ruler out because it's like, hey, I paid for the space. You'd be amazed how much latitude you can gain with one glazed Dunkin' Donut pastry. It is amazing. I've turned it around, man, from hostility to best buddyship.
You know why that works so well is because every man, woman, and child craves a buttery snack. So.
Nice job.
Bring snacks, make friends.
There you go.
Now, the actual physical setup. Talk about the actual physical setup, because you've got a. I was sat kitty corner to you, and you do a really nice job of physically setting up the book setting up the booth.
I actually don't.
Tell me a little bit about your strategy.
Well, my strategy needs to get a little bit better. I need to take on some more tips that I'm probably going to give and just continue to not take. But first of all, I've got that gigantic stuffed green cactus, and that is how everybody finds me. They all come up and say, "Oh yeah, I saw the cactus. I knew where you were." The most important thing about to keep in mind while you're setting up your table in your mind at home, whatever, when you're coming up with ideas, things to bring, is you've got a 2D surface. You want to make it 3D. So, you know, get little stands, put little things underneath your portfolios to stand them up so people can are more tempted to, well, most likely will see them and also are more tempted to come over and browse through. You know, I've got the cactus, I've got a little stand for the buttons, which looks like crap, but it's there. I also have a really hideous bright teal tablecloth that I bring with me. And this just kind of like adds a little flair, adds a little color. It's got the little southwestern feel to it for the cactus. And so I've got kind of a theme going on. But one thing I have forgotten to do that I'd like to do and I think is really important is putting a banner in the front that says Girls with Slingshots so people know who the heck I am. If they see the cactus, they might not actually, you know, they might not read the strip, or they might have heard of Girls with Slingshots, but they don't know the cactus. They're more likely to recognize you if you have the name of either yourself or your comic that you work on right up there for them to see.
That kind of goes towards advertising in general, and that's something that you, Scott, told me to do, because you said, "Give me a banner ad for Star Slip." And Starslip, I think, has a lot of complicated stuff in it. And I'm going, okay, it's a museum, a space, and the guy, and the insect, and the thing. And I'm trying to come up with a banner that will condense that idea. But mm-hmm. you cannot condense that idea. All you can do is get somebody's attention. Scott says, do set phasers for fun. That's your thing. And I'm like, but there's no phasers, and it's not fun. And he said, do it anyway. And it works better. So you yeah. have a huge cactus at your table that's cute and fun to look at. And it doesn't matter that object doesn't convey what your strip is about at the first part. That just gets people to come and look at it. And then you mm-hmm. can do the rest at that point.
I have spotted Danielle at cons numerous times. I mean, I can spot her out of a crowd. And the reason why is because every time I see her, she is fast walking, like exercise fast walking somewhere, holding a giant stuffed cactus. You know? I mean, it works. It works.
Yeah, it does. It sure does.
I think one of the keys to a good convention setup is getting as much stuff vertical as possible, whether it's
yeah.
hanging the banner behind you, getting a banner that's up on a stand, getting as much vertical as you can is a big help.
You know, something I'm going to do next year at Pittsburgh being absolutely my favorite show, just because I know the show so well now, the locals know me, and I always get a corner table. It's big enough for me to set up all my stuff. This year, or I guess next year, I'm going to be doing I have no idea if this is going to work or not. I'm going to do a GWS puppet show. At like certain times, yeah, I'm really psyched about this. I'm gonna make a little curtain, you know, and I've already got some people who are gonna do the voices, do a little script, so people can get the flavor of what the strip is all about. It's gonna be great. I cannot wait for this.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll work, but I'm thinking just do it at certain times during the day. You know, have it kind of organized so that people know. Put out some flyers, let them know when it's gonna be. So. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, do you guys want to switch gears a little bit and talk to this email or no?
Yeah.
Because it has more to do with a first con appearance and what a person should expect. Should I say what strip it is? Because it's a good strip.
Do it.
It's from Ben Patton. He says, "Hi, Chris. I'm planning on taking jump leads to the San Diego Comic-Con next year." That's a sci-fi strip. And that's the art that's really good. He writes it and somebody else does the art. And I was wondering if you could give me some advice. I'm hoping to have enough money for a proper booth, but as I've never been to the con before, having previously lived in the UK, it was hardly convenient for me to get to. I have no idea what to expect in terms of space and how I'm able to use it, especially using it effectively. Now, he's talking about getting a 10x10 booth. And he's got merchandise with him. But what kind of stuff can he expect at not necessarily a larger con like San Diego, but what is the pro and con of having the 10x10 at San Diego versus Artist Alley versus, you know what I mean? Like, would you start by telling somebody you should get a 10x10 booth? Because I wouldn't.
Not at San Diego.
That goes through my mind, too.
Especially not at San Diego.
Mm.
Because that's a lot of money.
I think I'd cut my teeth in Artist Alley first. You're making a really big jump going right to the booth, especially if you don't know what you're going to be expecting, you know?
I think it's kind of quaint, too, for people to see, like, a new person that they've never seen at a convention before in Artist Alley because they feel like they're little, you know, adventurers. They've just discovered you for the first time. It's more thrilling for them.
Well, I went to a con in Dallas where, what was it, 2 years ago, and we were in the dealer's room, and there were a couple other web cartoonists in the Artist Alley, and they did a lot better than we did.
Where? Mm-hmm. Oh, Wizard World, Texas?
Yeah. And I don't know whether or not it was because the dealer room wasn't that well organized a con or there wasn't a lot of people there or what, but they said they did real well at Artist Alley.
Well, I think so. And really it's where the traffic is going depending on the con.
Yeah.
Like in San Diego, maybe it helps to be in an exhibitor booth. I know that for me in San Diego, we do better when we're in with the webcomics section than when we are with when we're with Image.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that when you're surrounded by other artists on your level,
yeah,
then the mindset of the person walking through is going to be there. Whereas if you go into the dealer's room and there's, you know, freaking Top Cow and every other huge and toy companies and
you're gonna
and
get
movies.
Lost. Yeah, you're going to get lost in there. No, I agree. I agree.
And I think you can learn a lot more in Artist Alley, too. Because you, when you're in Artist Alley, you're right there in amidst people who are really putting out dozens of different ways of presenting their comics to the people that are walking by. Yeah. And I don't think you get that experience at a booth.
Yeah,
you know, they offered to move me to one of the middle booths at Baltimore just because I know some of the people who work there. They're really, you know, you're a bigger name. You should be over here. Let's put you over here. And they tried to move me, and it's kind of like, you know, it's not going to be as I'm not going to get the same group, and people aren't going to be looking for me there. I'd rather be on the Artist Alley side next to the, you know, cross the way against the wall and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you already told all your readers that's where you're going to be.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think that you can go to a convention and get lost in it really easily, especially the bigger ones. And don't be so eager necessarily to get into what you perceive as the area where all the big guns are, because it might be more detrimental than helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree.
What else?
I was going to say, I've got a list of things to, this has been so helpful to other people. A lot of people have asked me, what do you bring to a convention? And I actually have a box, just because I'm such a procrastinator. You know, last minute before a show, I'm always forgetting to put together like a box of necessary stuff to bring with me. So I've got kind of a checkoff list, if you guys want to hear it. I've got this box that I just called the convention kit, and it's just got, you know, string, any kind of, like, rope or something like that, thumbtacks, rubber bands, duct tape, definitely whatever it's called, the clear tape, scotch tape.
You can't have enough tape.
Yeah, you just really can't. You're going to wind up using it. A lot of times you can't nail things into the walls or, you know, they have a lot of specifications. You can't do certain things to the walls. So you want to bring a lot of tape. Scissors. Everybody always forgets scissors, X-Acto knives, rulers, sort of thing. I can't remember the whole. I should have actually had this ready for you guys, but I've got, you know, this
and
whole list of things.
Whatever you do, do not pack it in your carry-on. My wife has twice accidentally, and not just an innocent, innocuous restricted item, the granddaddy of all forbidden items, twice they have pulled a box cutter out of her pack-on bag. And I mean with the first time I distanced myself. I went, whoa, I am out of here.
That's so funny because, and like there's a handgun in there too, but nobody cares.
It's
the box cutter.
And I was so embarrassed. I was like, Angela, the box cutter? She goes, I cannot believe I forgot that was in that bag. She was using that same bag to transport stuff between the con and the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I have a tip for travel. If you have room, bring merchandise on the plane with you as your carry-on, because you can have a carry-on and a personal item. And I put a couple clothes in the personal, in like a backpack. And then I take some, like 10 books with me on the plane. Because when your luggage gets lost, when your books get lost, inevitably, not if, then you will show up at the con and you will have nothing that first day.
I tell you what, it was really great bringing books. I saved a lot on shipping this year by almost perfectly down to the book determining what I needed to bring, and I only had a half a suitcase full of merchandise to bring back. And boy, that was so nice. That is what kills me every year, is bringing too much and having I blow all my profit shipping it back. Books are so heavy.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's hard. I think that's just something you have to feel out by getting more con experience.
Yeah.
Because I always take too much, but I've had the luxury of being able to drive it around most of the time. Not so much anymore.
Hey, I've got a question for you, and then we'll wrap this up because we're at 44 minutes.
Okay.
A con pet peeve of mine.
Yep. I know which one this is already.
Do you really?
I think so.
Okay. A con pet peeve.
Chris has always got that bad breath. He's leaning over me.
A con pet peeve of mine is the person who will bring up to me their little stapled together mini comic and say, I'm a big fan. I'm sitting over here at this table. You want to swap books. And they have this little mini comic that they made at Kinko's, and they want one of the books that cost me like $2, you know?
For 2,000 of
them. Yeah, for 2,000 of them. And he gets offended when I don't want to swap them. Don't come up. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
For the love of God, don't do that to me. Please.
Here's another tip. If you want to get free books out of creators, pretend you're a cartoonist. Go photocopy some scribbles and then try and trade them. Somebody will take you up on it.
I love getting free comics at the cons. I love other creators coming up and handing me something, and I do it too. I mean, I'm happy to take a stack of books and go walk around and give them to people. But to expect the exchange, I think, is a little too much.
See, your gripe was more creator related, exhibitor related, and I thought you were going to say you don't like the guy who stands at your booth, who bought his stuff or came to meet you and all that.
Oh, thank you.
And then he just stays.
Let's talk about real quick etiquette. There was one guy, and he shows up every year in Baltimore. I am blanking on his name right now.
That's good, I think.
But
don't call him out.
He comes out. Right. He visits Frank, and always visits me. And then he just drops his stuff, and he stands there.
Yep.
And he never leaves. I mean, he was there almost all day, Friday and Saturday. Always to my right, always standing over me. And what do you say to that guy? I'm going to have to start saying something.
I've been doing it lately.
I'd love to know the answer to that question, because I call them booth barnacles, because you cannot get them off of your booth with a crowbar.
Great.
And it's such a horrible thing to have bad feelings about, because in a lot of cases they know you, they know your comic, they're really nice, but after a certain point, they're not to sound nasty, but they're blocking your table from other people, and at some point you'd like to meet some other people, and I don't know the answer to that one. It's really, really tough.
I will do this.
I always hand out flyers at a convention, and I will reach right past them to hand out more flyers to people, and not in a mean way. And I don't do it, I don't push them out of the side, but I will reach past them, and sometimes they kind of get the hint, and they say, I know that you're trying to get, trying to promote your comic and everything. I'll see you later. And every now and again, that works. But some people, there's no hint that you can drop that's going to get them off.
Chris, do you remember what I said to that guy?
No, I don't.
Because I came back from a panel, and I go, are you still here? And he goes, yeah. And I said, you have nothing better to do today? And he goes, no, I came to see you guys.
Aww.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
I'm going to start putting them to work. Here, make yourself useful. Here are some flyers. Go hand these out at the door.
I was just thinking that might be a good idea. Give them a costume or something, a skull costume.
Yeah, not a good idea, because then they're going to show up every time. What can I do for you?
Yeah, That's a tough one. I've even had this fantasy of putting an egg timer out. The timer goes off, and I like a psychologist. I'm sorry, our time here is done.
Ding! All right, you've got to go.
I found a tip for the very few female creators out there. This is so horrible, but it's so true. I had a friend of mine, a really great artist named Bill Ellis, sit with me at Baltimore a couple years ago, and he shared a table with me. And the amount of people who came to visit and came to buy sketches just completely dropped once they saw that there was a male sitting next to me.
Oh, yeah.
It's really sick, but it's completely true. If you're a female and you're a creator, just find another cute female to sit with you. Find a booth babe of your own, because otherwise you're going to lose so much attention.
Oh, man.
It's terrible.
That's so funny, because Erica and I have talked about that. I do better because she's there.
Oh, yeah, bring her.
Because she's a girl, and there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I do better with Angie, too.
That is weird and upsetting. Yeah.
Wasn't Danielle? Weren't you the one at the show? We asked you what your secret was, and you like grabbed your boobs. Wasn't that you?
Yeah, it was probably me. It's my typical answer. Seriously, it's sad, but it's kind of true. You know, well, and I mean, there's also the whole, like, it's a female doing cartoons. There's not many of us, so, you know, it's not actually the boobs, because I'm not that well endowed, but, you know, it's just being a female at a comic convention and not just being a booth babe, as they call them. Huge. It's great. I mean, it works really well.
Chris, I say you and I start a new comic.
God damn it.
And we hire a female to be our...
Erica and I already had this idea.
That's awesome.
We will do a strip and we will say Erica does it. And
yeah.
See how that works.
And have her, like, represent us at the con.
And she will wear a blonde wig. And then nobody will know.
Well, that wraps it up for this this episode of Webcomics Weekly. I would like to thank, first of all, our guest panelist who stepped in at the last minute, especially after we attempted this the night before and failed with audio problems. So thanks, Danielle, for stopping by and doing the podcast.
Well done, Danielle.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back.
Girlswithslingshots.com is the address.
Also, would like to once again thank the wonderful Bad Giga.
Bad Wigwam.
I almost made it through a whole podcast without getting my name fresh. I'm over here biting my fingernail. You did it to me again.
It went from Brad Geiger to Bad Giga to Ba Wigwam to just from wigwam to teepee. From teepee to peepee, and then from peepee to peepee pants. So at some point
there
at the con, Chris was like, call peepee pants.
Tell them what we're doing.
Evil-comic.com.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Across from me, as always, my partner in crime and life, love.
Hetero life mate.
Christopher Straub at starslip.com. Check out his weekend strip, The Alterverse War.
Oh, yeah.
It's good stuff.
It's picking up.
It's picking up.
And, as always, Scott Kurtz, PvP, player versus player, pvponline.com. You know the name. You've tried the rest. I'll try the best.
Now try the best. I think PvP's tagline is going to be soon. That's still going?
That's still going, President Mark.
That's still trekking along. So thanks, and we will we'll Webcomics Weekly you again
real soon.
Real soon.
See you later.
See you later. All right.
I'm gonna go take a piss.
Are we good?
I've had to pee this entire time.
Leave it in.
Got to go before we left.
Save it.
I'm so glad I'm still recording this.
All right.
Talk to you guys later.
Good job. All right.
Bye.
All right, see you around.
Bye.
Bye.